Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. So happy to be back with you on a Monday. It always feels so good to be back on a Monday. Thank you for making that possible. Thanks for being with us. Our number is 888-318-7884. And boy, do we have a good Monday for you. Second hour, our good friend Father Sebastian Walsh will be here to talk about his new book, Always a Catholic, How to Keep Your Kids in the Faith for Life and Bring Them Back If They Have Strayed. This hour, a guest, I wish I could talk to Liz Lev just about every week, but I'm just delighted to have her back. Art historian Elizabeth Lev is our guest, and your sacred art questions are welcome. We're really not going to limit you. If you've got a sacred art question, you're welcome to call. Liz Lev is the author of How Catholic Art Saved the Faith, The Triumph of Beauty and Truth in Counter-Reformation Art. She teaches Baroque, Renaissance, and Christian art at Duquesne University in Rome, and she has a wonderful, wonderful tour company. If you're thinking about doing some art touring in Rome, she's the person to check in with. Elizabeth Lev, thank you very much for being here with us.
Well, thank you for such a great introduction, and I'm hoping people will be able to tour in Rome soon.
Well, maybe just start there. Give us an update. What do you think? When will we be able to do it?
This is just my opinion, so it's I don't have a crystal ball, and I certainly don't have an in with the Italian government, but it feels a little bit like the last gasp of the lockdowns. Many of your listeners probably know that we've had this last kind of what they call the red lockdown, where restaurants are closed, and we've kind of gone back to almost what it was like a year ago. But we know in Rome it's a lot less stringent. We don't have the same police presence and the same scare tactics, and it feels a lot, I think, to us in Rome, like this is the last gasp of the restriction, really restrictive environment.
Okay, that's good, because I saw on the internet, I don't know, maybe you're not allowed to talk about this, with you giving a tour of Rome to American TV star Kevin James. I was like, wow, she's a big deal. Do you remember this? Or
oh, that was great fun.
Yeah.
That was really great fun, and what a just lovely Catholic family. It was one of those very therapeutic tours with a Hollywood person where you talked about God and you talked about
beautiful.
Jesus, and you talked about faith. I mean,
that's great.
Ooh, I felt good.
but all kinds of folks you've given tours of, and is there always a faith element for people, or is that sometimes lacking? The people don't get that Rome is a Christian city, in addition to everything else it is, that it's a Christian city and that there is an element of faith to all of this.
So difficult for people to imagine, but I've actually had tour requests where I don't really want to hear anything about faith. I'd like to see the Vatican and the Sistine Chapel from the psychological point of view or the technical point of view, but I really don't want to hear anything about the faith point of view. You can probably imagine how well that works out with me. But I find that even though people tend to put, I have a lot of people who kind of the big barrier at the beginning is, we're not Catholic, we don't know anything about the Catholic Church, and that kind of tone, like we don't want to know anything about the Catholic Church. But I find that understanding a little bit about the faith for anybody makes the works more clear, makes the work speak more. It's like the works are speaking a language. And if you don't want to understand at least hello, please, and goodbye, then there's really no point in you thinking you're going to communicate in that country. And so people seem to be, I have found universally, people are very amenable to at least learning, if you will, the hello, please, thank you, goodbye of Christian iconography. And that gives me a lot of hope with people and a hope in the world in general.
Our number 888-318-7884. If you have questions for our guest Liz Lev, I'll just mention the book "How Catholic Art Saved the Faith: The Triumph of Beauty and Truth in Counter-Reformation Art," among other things that our guest has written. I want to ask you today, kind of about it's funny because we've been getting questions about like Renaissance art, and they come along the lines of this: How is it that there was this great outburst of this beautiful Catholic art, and we don't see that anymore? So I'll just start right there. However articulate or inarticulate that question is, how do you explain that moment and why we're not living in that moment anymore?
Ever since I saw that, I don't know how long ago this interview we set up was, but I remember the second I saw it, I was like, yes, my favorite question.
Okay.
Because it's a really really important thing to ask ourselves. So what is it, besides the genius of the artist, what is it that makes all that art available? I mean, those of you who have been to Rome, who have been to Florence, who have been to Venice, who have been to Paris, where do you go and see these works? They're in churches. They're works that were made for people's houses and end up in museums. Part of the problem is the lack of patronage, right? So this is an era where when people want to express, look how successful I've been, look how great, how God, I've risen above my circumstances, how do they do it? They do it by commissioning a great work of art in a chapel. It was a way for people to, in one way, express their piety. So if we were speaking today, in today's speak, we might call it, all that virtue signaling in building those chapels. Right. But the fact is, it was a way for people to express their success, their status, their gratitude. And it's very important to remember for their gratitude, their sense of community, and their sense of giving back. Commissioning a beautiful work of art for a public place like a church is a way of giving back. So these people can have 15 works of art in their house, but they give one or two or five or 20 inside a church where other people can see them. And that made the entire world more, the world that they lived in, so the world of Renaissance Italy, people were more aware of the saints' days, the saints' stories. It was more than just, it's the 19th and it's St. Joseph and I can eat meat on Lent and on Friday in Lent. It wasn't just, it's St. Patrick's. But people knew all of those saints, Barbara, Lucy. They were part of your world. They were part of who you commemorated. And so you had a much more literate audience for art.
So we don't have a culture of patronage then, is at least part
Absolutely
of the problem.
Not. Absolutely not. We do not have a culture of artistic patronage. And it's something that the more the years pass, the more I realize if we would like to create a new Renaissance, we need to create new Renaissance patrons. People who are aware of what of art and what they're looking for and what, you know, a sense of an aesthetic, people, but even people who are willing to put a work of art in their houses that is Christian. Instead of having like the sort of pretty little sunset painting or something that just sort of is neutral and makes us feel good, I mean, if you put up a work of art, if you put something interesting that has a story behind it, when you bring people over, that thing you want people to pay attention to, and then you tell the story. Oh, we picked that up when we were in Singapore, and ha ha ha, it's a funny story. Well, if you do that with sacred art, I saw this painting and I was thinking about how much I really admire St. Monica and how much it's important to me as a mother. I mean, there are ways that we can incorporate art into our lives, into our daily lives, and it's a very easy way to evangelize.
Again, our number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about sacred art with art historian Liz Lev. 888-318-7884. I imagine that there was, how did you, in the olden days, how did you find, I'm going to get a Da Vinci painted, and then how would I do it today? Like, I wouldn't know how do I find someone who really can make beautiful art and patronize that person so that they have a living, for one thing, and they can keep producing art, but also so that more beautiful objects come into the world.
So this is going to be a little bit, see if I can be clear. So the Renaissance, one of the great events that happens in the Renaissance is name recognition, or if you will, branding for artists.
Okay.
Artists become known by name. So suddenly Leonardo da Vinci becomes Leonardo da Vinci. He's standing on the shoulders of 100 years of artists who have worked very, very, very hard for name recognition. What is very interesting about the name recognition question is that the major players in getting artists' names known were the religious orders. It is the Franciscans who are commissioning, the Giottos who are commissioning, the Pietro Cavallinis, the Ambrogio Lorenzettis, and that's how these names, actually very specifically, the Franciscans and the Dominicans begin to identify who has the potential to produce the to see. And then they further those artists. And the next thing you know, these artists start to, they form them, they help them. And next thing you know, we have names that go up in lights. Once you have a generation of people who have raised up from, I think the famous story is that Giotto, who is He's a name in the history of art that for art historians, it makes us catch our breath. He's so important. And he started out, the story is, as a goat herd. So this is the reason why this story exists. Whether or not it's true, can't tell you. But I will tell you there's a reason why that story exists. This kid was out sketching and watching goats. So that would be the lowest social strata you can possibly imagine.
Right.
By the end of his life, he's working for kings and popes. And the point of the story, he's hanging out with Dante Alighieri. The point of this story is that if you have artistic talent and it is recognized, you can be raised from nothing to everything, kind of like the way we treat professional sports, right? Right now, that you can you can come from nothing and you can become a professional sports star and become, you know, a globally known face, or you can be, you know, a movie star. That's our path, for our fast path for glory. But in that world, it was the ability to communicate through the arts, and that growth creates. Yeah. I want Leonardo da Vinci. And it's a novelty. It's so new when it happens.
Do you have hope that we could have that come back again, at least within our community, or no?
I do.
You do?
I do, because I've been worried about this for years. And because of it, it's a conversation that comes up. And I began to realize a lot of people out there who are busily trying to further Catholic artists, who are trying to help them get noticed, who are trying to kind of bring them together so you can see, look, these are all these different people working in the arts. On one hand, there is a real attempt to value, lift up, encourage, and try to create competitions.
Yeah.
So that these artists can compete against each other, see what they're doing, see, you know, this is the Renaissance we all recognize in the history of art. The Renaissance began with a competition. It was Donatello versus Ghiberti, and it was for the doors of the baptistry of Florence. And it was that competition that began a Renaissance, which is really about competition. Leonardo is competing with Michelangelo. Michelangelo is competing with Raphael. I mean, there was, again, like professional sports, there was always the young, hungry person who was right behind you. So you really had to always bring your A game. And so I feel like there's a lot of attempt to bring that out in the artists. Now we need, from the other part, we need to start looking at people who realize, you know what, I would like to have a holy family in my house. My favorite saint is Catherine of Alexandria. I would like a painting of Catherine of Alexandria, which is not, you know, a retread. I don't want a Caravaggio painting. I want Catherine of Alexandria the way she would look to me today in 2021. And that's, I think, what would bring about sort of the fullness of a Renaissance.
Liz Lev is our guest. Our number 888-318-7884. If you want to talk about the Renaissance, I'd love it if you would. But if you have a general, we're not going to say no to a good art question, sacred art question, 888-318-7884. The spring sale continues here. You can get everything over at shop.catholic.com. 10 to 25% off. Is it spring yet? I mean, this way I said the spring sale continues, but is today the first day of spring? All right, we started early. We're just really early with our sale. Go to shop.catholic.com right now and start savings.
Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics. Pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Delighted to have you with us on this Monday. And we get to talk to one of our favorite people, Liz Lev, who just will fire you up with the beauty, with the magnificence of art, and also with the work art can do. If I don't know if I'm allowed to say it that way, but the work of opening up the truth about the world to us, and especially the supernatural truths about the world. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-31-TRUTH. Not too long ago, I'm out in public and I see a guy and he's walking down the street and he's got a sweatshirt on, and across the front of it is, it's branded with a name, and the name is Jean-Michel Basquiat. And I thought, that's weird. Like, that's weird. But the thing that you were saying about branding, someone like Basquiat, who's very, maybe you see religion in it, I don't. It seems very secular to me. But there are very prominent artists working today. Are there prominent Christian? I mean, obviously Basquiat's not working today, but.
No, and Basquiat, I mean, he was very, very interesting in his own right, but I wouldn't say he's the direction that you're looking for. Although Andy Warhol, on the other hand, did have a very interesting he had a very interesting religious or Christian slant to him. Now, we do have artists working today. We have quite a few artists working today. Their names are just not terribly well known. We have all kinds of painters who are producing. So we have a man named Donny McManus who's working in sculpture. I was thinking about him a lot over St. Joseph's holiday, because he's done many sculptures of St. Joseph, really trying to think in terms of sort of the young, energetic, a very beautiful vision of who St. Joseph was, and that's kind of a thing that he works on. Natalia Tsarkova is a papal portrait artist who did these magnificent portraits of John Paul II, Benedict XVI. I think she's a portrait of Francis. She's done several saint portraits. She's really, really quite a stunning artist. Janet McKenzie, who does this lovely, lovely painting. She's very interested in saints of color. And she has these beautiful purple mauve tones and this very iconic, it's just like an updated form of icon. I think her work is quite lovely. We can keep going, but I see, the more I really appreciate that there are a lot of very interesting ideas out there and ways of envisioning things. So, yes.
Okay. I'll get myself a Janet McKenzie sweatshirt. And next time I see the guy with the Basquiat sweatshirt, I'll be like, hey, look at us. We love the art world. There's a bunch of folks on the line for you. You okay to go take some calls now?
I am very happy to take calls.
Our guest is Elizabeth Lev. If you'd like to get her book, and I do highly recommend it, and it sounds like an outrageous claim almost, how Catholic art saved the faith. Doesn't it sound? But it's not outrageous. It really is a thing that happened. How Catholic art saved the faith, the triumph of beauty and truth in the Counter-Reformation. I hope I didn't offend you by saying that.
I think it's magnificent you referred to it that way, because that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, but it's it's one where you back up. Let's put it that way. That's what I was trying to get at. That you back up the claim.
The editor held my feet to the fire. Sophia Press, they held my feet to the fire on that one.
Eric in Kansas, listening on the Catholic Answers Live app. You are first up today. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Liz Lev.
Hey, great. Thanks. I appreciate the topic, and I think it's a good question. I have recently come to a position, unfortunately, where I'm on my own again or in a long time, but I wanted to hang some stuff up in my apartment. I had a bunch of old stuff I had when I was single. Not so neat now, but I do want to put up, I think it would make sense, because it's a good thing, is to put up some good Catholic art. And someone with a limited budget, I trying to find out what I could do, whether it's support our upcoming guys and gals who are doing Catholic art, or, some reproductions or something like that.
Yeah, where to start then? On a limited budget, you want some Catholic art in the house.
Well, I would go with, when you walk into my house, the very first thing you see is a poster I have from the Vatican Museums of the Holy Family by Federico Fiori, who was one of my favorite painters. And since I can't buy a Barocci because you can't, but I put that as the very sort of first thing in my house. So I put up a post. I mean, I put up a framed poster. I made it look very nice. But it's, to me, it's a reproduction that I of a painting that I love. And when people talk about it, lots of people come in and they stop and they talk about it. Our priest, we have this wonderful tradition in Italy where priests come to your house over Easter and they bless. They come through the apartment buildings and they you have house blessings. And it's just a normal thing. And it happens in every single neighborhood in Italy. And the priest comes in, he's like, oh, Baroche. We have this whole long conversation about how much we love Baroche. He knows me as the house that has the Baroche. So that's a good way. Reproductions are good. Or, you know, why don't you, you know, one of these days, if your church, if your parish is having some kind of art fair, go see if there's anything you like. If there's anything that maybe you can, listen, Caravaggio was doing cheap devotional paintings when he was spotted by Cardinal Del Monte, and Lord knows what a Caravaggio fetches now. So go take a look and see what people are producing within your budget and see if there's something that speaks to you.
Eric, thank you very much. I know I'm not letting go of my Caravaggios. The price is too good. It's too dear. Thanks, Eric, for starting us. There's a lot of folks who want to talk to you about art, which makes me so happy because I'll tell you the truth, Liz. We don't get our biggest calls on Monday. Monday, people listen. They don't call. So this something we've hit a nerve, and I'm really happy about it. To get to talk about sacred art. Let's go to Brian, Texas, listening on Red Sea Radio is Carla. Carla, thank you so much for your call. Go ahead with your question for Liz Lev.
Hi. I don't have a question per se, but I just wanted to, I love to do Catholic art. I started out, I've always been creative, but I started out teaching. I weaseled my way into teaching art at my kids' Catholic school. And I'm talking to the kids about, you know, how God is the greatest artist of all, and he's actually done everything first, you know, from the rainbow all the way up, and my art started to become religious. And so I know that, I mean, it's very whimsical and very unsophisticated, but your other caller, you could search, you know, Catholic art, hashtag Catholic art or something on Instagram. There are a lot of very affordable Catholic artists that are out there that sell their prints. And there's all kinds of cool stuff out there that, I mean, your home, like she was saying, well, your home is your domestic church, you know, and why not have something beautiful on your wall that happens to be something religious? And it can be, you know, it can be portraits or it can be more subjective. And I just, there's such a wealth of stuff out there. That it just
well,
makes
thanks,
me
Carla.
So excited.
Let me get Liz's reaction to that. I'm interested in what you think. Liz.
I think it's true. You can find a lot of prints. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of sites now, and there are galleries that bring together Catholic artists, and there are reproductions that you can get of Catholic artists. So yes, there is really very little excuse to not be, if you're interested in Catholic art, there's no way you can say, well, I can't quite manage it. And also, I think the most important thing you said is that your house is a domestic church, and that is exactly right. And we decorate churches, we decorate places where we gather in the faith. And this is a place where we invite people into our homes to get to know us. We get to know our children. They get to know our pets. They get to know our cooking styles. They get to know our decor. But for some reason, we want to hide the most essential part of our identity, which is that we believe in Jesus Christ. And so I think that having something in your house that really, you know, for better or for worse, it talks about who you really are, because at the end of the day, it's who we are before God. I think that's at the end of the day, the most important discussion you're going to have.
Carla, thanks. It struck me too that she said she taught art in a Catholic school. And I see these Catholic schools now, Liz, with advertising their STEM certification or some other certification. But why should we be teaching art to kids in these Catholic schools as well? Why should they be getting an art education?
The art education, I think, is essential, particularly for Catholic schools, because that is the way that we decided back in 250 AD as a Christian community, we decided to transmit our story not only through our personal witness, but also through the things that we, through art and through imagery. And so we learned to communicate. We managed to speak to a Roman Empire that did not want to hear anything we were saying by engaging through art. And so it is a very, very, very important thing that this language, this is a language which is now 1,800 years old, in which we have spoken about that vocation to holiness that is incumbent upon every single one of us as Christians, that vocation is very beautifully expressed through the beauty of art. And so it is a very, very important thing that young people don't look at Catholic art or Christian art as something that doesn't belong to them. It is part of their legacy.
Again, 888-318-7884. Our guest is Liz Lev. We're talking about sacred art. You are welcome to call with your questions. I got to tell you right now, the lines keep filling up. I think we got to take a quick break. But Liz, I also, when we come back, if you would, maybe we'll let people know how they can contact you if they do want you or one of your colleagues to, when they go to Rome, to have you show them this art.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll do that when we come back. Liz Lev is our guest. We're talking sacred art, and we've struck a nerve because lots and lots of folks on the line. You can give it a try. 888-318-7884.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
According to divine command, we should give God worship, but how do we know if we're doing it right? Is worship a form of self-help? To make me feel better? A form of social activism or even a commodity? Or is it something that transcends all of those? In Real Religion, How to Avoid False Faith and Worship God in Spirit and Truth, Father Jeff Kirby cuts through the misguided modern notions about God and religion and takes you back to the foundation for true worship, God's revelation about himself. From his first contact with his chosen people to the culmination of his revelation in Jesus Christ, God shows us what religion is supposed to be like and how to make the practice of it a lifelong virtue in our lives. Order your copy of Real Religion by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Great Monday, just a great Monday program. Second hour, our friends, Father Sebastian Walsh from the Norbertines up the road from us here, talk about his new book, Always a Catholic, How to Keep Your Kids in the Faith for Life and Bring Them Back if They've Strayed. This hour, art historian just wonderful speaker, Liz Lev here, talk with us about sacred art, talk with us a bit about what happened in the Renaissance. You're welcome to call with your questions, 888-318-7884. I did want you to let us know, Liz, sometime maybe in the summer, maybe in the spring, at some point they have to open Rome back up again. So if people would like to, maybe their group would like to do a tour with you, how do they get in touch with you to do that?
I am very easy. It's elizabeth-lev.com. And you'll find that there are tours, and I think my articles go up there and things I write. And if you need a little Rome fix, my fellow guides and I started a little something called Masters Gallery Rome. So it's mastersgalleryrome.com, where we make videos and we have free web lectures where we talk about Rome. So if you need a little fix, every Wednesday at, I think it is 3 p.m. Eastern Time, there is one of us, or me, or my colleagues, talking about something wonderful in Rome.
Wow! How great! And you can just sign up for that on.
If you look on mastersgalleryrome.com, you'll see web lectures. And you'll see the lineup for the next couple months, and they're wonderful. We've been doing a series called Keys to Religious Rome, and I will close the series next week on Monday with a talk on the scandal of the cross, and we'll be talking about crucifixion and the Church of the Holy Cross and what the cross was to ancient Rome, because it's hard for us to imagine. Like, we as Catholics walk into a church, and if the cross doesn't have a corpus, we're like, oh wait, this isn't a Catholic church. But for the early Christians, the idea was, oh no, we can't do that. So it seemed to me a perfect thing to talk about during Holy Week, how it really was a scandal for the Romans.
I guess, again, Elizabeth Lev, lots of folks on the line heading back to the phones. 888-318-7884, our number. Jim in Kansas, you are up next. Jim, thanks for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Liz Lev.
Yes, thank you. Copy the question. I'm an artist myself, but aside from that, attitude I run across from a lot of people, and I find it particularly strong in a lot of the clergy, is that only old masters, Renaissance-style art and painting and sculpture are appropriate for this sanctuary and nothing else is appropriate. And I'd just love to hear your view on that.
So I can understand where they're coming from. There has been a sort of a great divorce, if you will, between art, the artistic community, and the church. The church has occasionally tried to bridge that divide by allowing for a kind of art that ends up alienating the faithful, either because it's excessively abstract or because it is excessively secular. So there's been a sort of a difficult reattaching on the part of the institutional church to artists. And I think that's why looking to the bishop or the pope to resolve this problem is not the answer. It's not really Pope Francis's job to get us liking art again. I think it is. So I do understand their point of view. At the same time, I do believe that a lot of modern churches, we are built a lot of churches in a work of art by Barocci, my beautiful Barocci painting, would really look ridiculous in some of these modern churches. Like, what is that doing there? It's like someone just decided to. Throw some 1600 just for giggles. And that kind of art requires a different kind of, that kind of space requires a different kind of art. So I think there needs to be a sort of a return to a conversation. And I tend to feel that conversation will happen more successfully in more the capillaries of the church than the sort of the major organs. So you start by getting used to a space, to a parish, you get used to a family that wants to patronize art. Maybe there's a religious order that's kind of looking for their new chapel, and a dialogue has to happen to reconnect. I mean, this has really been a serious falling out. It's like a marriage in which the couple start communicating for a very long time, and now they look at each other with suspicion. And so, a little bit of learning how to speak to each other again and understanding you have to give a little on both sides, it's just simply going to have to happen.
Jim, thank you for that question. Really appreciate it. It does seem to me, Liz, and I wonder what your take is on this, that some of what has happened in the modern period with art is actually intentionally a critique of, or even a kind of a slap in the face of, some of the older aesthetics. And it seems like some of that cannot be incorporated into sacred art, because that the kind of... the fact that it is itself a critique of sacred art kind of makes that impossible. Am I way off on that?
No, this has been a much longer process, I think, than people realize. I mean, it began in the 19th century when subject matter stopped being religious. So the major patrons, the major places where artists started to gravitate in order to produce works of art were academies, salons, and then later on galleries, right? So just works that are going to be sold. And this is the kind of the progression from when the church was the great patron up until about the 1700s. And then we see this, and the kings were great patrons, and the kings tended to be Catholic. So we see this sort of progression away from that to the academy, from the academy to these salons, from the salons to the marketplace. And it begins to be the market that makes the decision about the art. And the market, the art is sort of sold as a kind of ultimate liberty. And of course, the very first form of liberty, we've been watching this happen for the past century, we've been watching this happen in accelerated fashion in the past 20 years. The first kind of liberty is we would like to be removed from all restraints of these ridiculous religions, the religio. We don't like being tied up by the absurd moralities of these churches. We don't want their rules. We don't want their... So art becomes much more abstract. It's much less narrative. That already begins to divorce art from any kind of, you know, way of evangelizing, because what is the Bible? It's a book of our story. I mean, we are a story. We have a story to tell. We have something to narrate. We have an actual historical event that happened of the incarnation that we need to talk about. So the more that we try to create an abstraction of that with the people who don't really know what the Annunciation is, we've really created an enormous void. So yes, we have a lot of work to do in order to return art. But I'm telling you, the fact that your phones are, you know, lit, the fact that people go to museums when they could, and they want to know, they do want to know. I think people are becoming a little bit more willing, especially a society that has just been bound by rules. I think it's really interesting when art is supposed to not have any rules, right? So we got all of this modern art because suddenly art shook off these rules. There are no restrictions. We want no confinements, no barriers, no anything. But we have just lived a year under restrictions, we've had to learn how to be fruitful and multiply in our lives under restrictions. And we might just be more willing to understand that sometimes having gateposts is something that we need, or something that we have to learn to deal with gateposts in order to be able to play and to grow. I mean, it's a sort of little thought in the corner of my head, but I think we might be ready for a sea change in our thinking.
I don't think I've ever asked a question where I was less sure what I was asking and got a better answer in my whole life. Liz, I'm so grateful for you, because I was kind of fumbling for a question, and my gosh, what a wonderful lesson in where we are in the contemporary art situation. Thank you so much. And Jim, thank you. Thanks for that question. Let's go to Germantown, Maryland. John, listening on WMET Radio, you are next. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Liz Lev.
Hey, Liz, I got two quick questions. One is, can you talk about the letter to artists written by JP2 and how that's changed and affected things? And secondly, if you could talk a little bit about iconography and how that's different. I'll hang up and listen.
So everything I just said last minute was all, I think your question is well suited, because I basically cribbed it from
I know
St. John Paul II. St. John Paul II is like, oh yeah, you think you're going to take the credit for my thinking? St. John Paul II really was the one, Paul VI before him in his own way, but St. John Paul II really began to talk about trying to close the divide between artists and artists and the church. It was a very active attempt to create this bridge between the two. And what John Paul II started, really Benedict XVI, then followed up in a very powerful way, helping artists. So it's kind of like the Council of Trent, which proclaims that the church is going to reestablish a relationship with art. In 1563, when the Council of Trent closed, there was a real question about whether or not the church was going to commission art, because there had been a falling out. There had been problems between artists and the church that made the church think maybe we don't want to be commissioning art anymore. And the Council of Trent, like John Paul II, really affirmed an ancient tradition. And John Paul II, being an artist himself with those beautiful poems he wrote about the Sistine Chapel, he has a wonderful sense of what art can do. And he really thrusts art front and center in the church. He gets the Sistine Chapel cleaned. He's commissioning new artists. He added his new chapel in the Vatican. And then Benedict did kind of what happened post-Trent, which was to explain to artists the power they had. And I think when Benedict talks about the power of art to wound, to make us vulnerable, to draw us together, to evangelize, when he speaks that way, the via pulchritudinis, the way of beauty, he really told artists, this is what you need to do in order to bring people back together around a work of art and have art become something that is evangelizing. He didn't say, you have to put halos around their heads and you have to give them their attributes. He just reminded them of what the incredible power that art has. And you know, after a year of sitting at home and watching these, you know, series that Netflix and all these other services keep putting out for us, I mean, think about how much garbage and how many bad ideas people have ingested through the art of television writing, which there are extremely good television writers, but you ingest this bad art. It's in your house. It's in your living room. And what Benedict was trying to do is trying to remind artists that when people ingest this, you need to be giving them something pure, something nourishing, something that will strengthen them. And so I think the two of them, John Paul II and Benedict, were really hugely important in relaunching a dialogue with art. Then the second part of your question, which is iconography, which I don't even know where to begin on this one. I feel like I'm going to occupy the rest of the time on this question. Iconography, which is for your listeners, it is the idea of the study of the image. So what does the image mean? And we can have sort of two ways of speaking about iconography. We can talk about iconography in the more traditional Byzantine, sort of the Orthodox sense of the icon writers, where we see these icons in which every single aspect of the image has a kind of codified meaning. So you look at the work of art, which is, you know, meant to be, it's written, and as it, the word's written, and it's something that as you gaze upon it in prayer, you are sort of picking apart each one of the symbols and using those symbols to enter in prayerfully into the scene. But iconography in Western art, we talk about the ability to recognize the scene that's going on, the attribute of the saint, what's happening in the picture. And frankly, I find teaching young people, and up until 2020, doing tours every single day for people who have a gazillion letters after their names and all the education you want, I've, you know, been in the presence of people where when they don't recognize what an annunciation is, or they don't recognize what Jesus is doing, that guy is on the cross, like, oh, there's some guy on a cross. Or I have a story, if any of you guys have a fast access to a computer, my favorite story is I was using an unknown for my students in my exams. I always put up an unknown image, and the student is supposed to start by guessing what the subject is, and after that they're supposed to figure out who the artist is. And I put up an image of a nude female figure, which is the story of Danae. It's by the artist Titian, T-I-T-I-A-N. And it's the mythological story of this woman who was visited by Jupiter in this form of a shower of gold. And I put up, and two of my students said that was the Annunciation.
Oh, with a nude figure.
Nude reclining figure. That's become my school. Two of my students thought it was the Annunciation. At this point. So when we talk about iconography, you are right. I think if I understand the meaning behind the question, the real problem we have now is that we need to bring people back to knowing what your story is. I was in the Detroit Art Institute all day yesterday, and I was listening to people sort of trying to figure out the most basic of scenes or who these saints were. And because people don't know who Barbara or Lucy or Catherine of Alexandria is, you just get this sort of trite judgment of the, well, the Catholic Church doesn't like women or something, instead of really understanding how important these figures are. So yes, iconography is key, 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 which is why I, as much as I appreciate, and I actually kind of like some abstract art, I do not think right now that is appropriate for what the Catholic Church needs. The Catholic Church needs images that things that look like things, so we can reteach people the stories of our salvation that they have simply forgotten.
Liz Lev is our guest. We got to take a quick break. We will be right back.
Sorry.
We'll try to get no. I just wanted to leave on a high note, and I got nothing. I don't want to say too much because what you're saying is gold, and not from Jupiter either. We'll be right back.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
This is what St. Teresa of Calcutta, also known as Mother Teresa, once said about prayer. Love to pray. Feel often during the day the need for prayer and take trouble to pray. Prayer enlarges the heart until it is capable of containing God's gift of Himself. Ask and seek, and your heart will grow big enough to receive Him and keep Him as your own. That is why we need prayer.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm going to be a little unfair to Liz Lev at the moment. I'm not going to ask you your answer. I just want to know how many people have asked you about the Vatican Nativity.
Well, it filled my Christmas season.
Yeah. You can read what Liz had to say. You can find it online. I won't force you to go through it again. But she definitely had opinions about it. So 888-318-7884, our number. Art, the great power of art. It's not an accident, is it, Liz, that I was going to talk about the power of art to tell, as you said, tell our story. But the incarnation does something to art. The incarnation of God as a man changes what art can do, doesn't it?
It does. And that is my fundamental problem with art that doesn't look like anything. When God came into the historical world, He didn't come as a blob. He didn't come as a ink spot. He didn't come as an ectoplasm. He came as a human being, and He was touchable, and He was knowable, and He fried up fish for His friends, and people grabbed His robe, and He used His spit in His fingers to cure blindness. I mean, there was indication. I want you to know that I am sharing in this humanity, this physicality of yours. The passion itself is so horrifically physical, what they do to Him. So, I mean, art really, its job is to make present in its own flawed and imperfect way the perfect moment in history when God became man. And it's the whole justification. Otherwise, we have no reason to make art, because the first commandment is very clear, that thou shalt not make images of anything that flies in the air, walks on the earth, or swims in the sea. It's the Old Testament covenant, when God does not hang around with people. When Moses asks to see God, and God can see my face and live. That is, the Psalms cry out, when, O Lord, will I see your face? And then finally we see His face. And we have this incredible privilege, this incredible mystery, this joy. And how do we responding by saying, yeah, I've seen Jesus' face. It looks like an ink blot to me.
I mean, right, right. Yeah, that's not an adequate response.
The incarnation is the key to the whole business, the key to all of Catholic art. As I tell people who come with me to the Sistine Chapel, the subtext of every piece of great Catholic art you have ever seen, it is one. God became man. He was visible and knowable. That is the subtext. Everything else is gravy.
Jackie in Ohio, listening on 1060 AM, you are next. Go ahead with your question for Liz Leff.
Hello, Liz. This is Jackie Haydu, Father Mark's mom.
Hi, how are you? Hi. Say hi to Father Mark.
I will. I met up with you and Tom at Mark's farewell reception yes. when he was leaving Rome and got reassigned yes. to the States.
Yes, that was a
Jackie,
lovely.
I just got to know, Jackie, is that it? You just wanted to do this, or did you have an art question? Because the rest of us are the rest of us are doing a radio show. You do whatever you want, though, Jackie. You do whatever you want.
I just thought I better have a question where I wouldn't get it on the radio.
Well, go ahead and give it to us, Jackie.
Okay. Walking through Rome, which I've been several times, you see all these depictions of different things in sacred art, saints and different truths of our faith depicted on the outside of the buildings. Did people hire people or artists to do those, or did they do it to get attention for their skill? How did those come to be on the outsides of the buildings and homes there?
Ah, yeah. There's a thing called a Madonnelle?
Madonnelle. We have hundreds of these. They're called Madonnelle in the cities of Italy. Madonna, and elle is a diminutive. So the Madonnelle are these little images. They can be sculpted, cast, painted. They're made in very different forms, and they usually sit at the corner of buildings, and they have underneath a little votive light that people used to keep lit, and had a very wonderful purpose, these Madonnelle. And they served two purposes. The purpose number one was because of the lights that are kept lit underneath them, it was a way to illuminate the city at night. And Rome was a very dangerous city. Rome's not a dangerous city now, but it was once a very dangerous city at night. We have all kinds of stories from the time of Caravaggio, of the danger of walking around the streets of Rome at night. And so these Madonnelle provided, on one hand, a kind of a light source for people who were walking in the dark. So, that kind of works out nicely as a metaphor now, doesn't it? And during the day, you pass by these Madonnas and it was an invitation to pray to Mary. So as you go through your day, as you pass these Madonnelle, why don't you say hello to Mary? Why don't you say a Hail Mary as you pass by? And it kept sort of it kept in the capillaries, in the very sort of life of the city, this presence of particularly the Virgin watching over the city. They were made by artists. They were commissioned to make them. They were made by artists who aren't usually find Caravaggio making a Madonnelle or a Raphael, but that's because the works would be placed outside where they're subject to a great deal of wear and tear. So that's why you don't have like the super artists doing the exterior Madonnelle, but some of them are really extraordinarily beautiful and some of them are miraculous.
Oh, we had a little, sorry, Liz, we had a little audio problem. You said some of them were miraculous, but what followed that?
Some of them were miraculous. Yes. Some of them wept. Some of them bled.
Oh.
So yes, some of them have little plaques on them to talk about the miraculous events that are connected to them.
Thank you, Jackie. Appreciate that question. I'm going to continue just because I want to get as many on as I can. And I want to get to Maria in Louisiana. She's been waiting a long time. And Maria, thank you for waiting. Listening on the almighty 690 AM in Louisiana. Maria, go ahead with your question for Liz Leff.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to see, Liz, if you could speak a little bit about the patrons of the arts of the Vatican Museum and perhaps how, if you would recommend that to someone who's interested in supporting the arts, because I've got to testify to the sheer delight of going on a tour with Liz Leff in Rome. Oh. And I was able to do that with the patrons. So could you speak about the patrons?
Well, I must say Jackie Heydoux teed that up magnificently because her son, Mark Heydoux, Father Mark Heydoux, was the head of the patrons when I first got very involved with them. And now we have Father Kevin Lixey, who is the head of the patrons. And the patrons mm-hmm. of the Patrons of the Arts of the Vatican Museums is an organization that sponsors the conservation of the works of art in the Vatican Museums. It is a wonderful organization. It is a group of people that is very diverse and very, very interesting. And they work together or individually in order to, in a certain sense, we would say, adopt a work of art, but also take on major projects that 500-year-old museum needs. I mean, this museum is completely, it has to support itself entirely. It's not getting government grants. And so this brilliant idea, which was a little over 30 years ago, as the cleaning of the Sistine Chapel was taking place, of having a group of people who would be friends of the museum to allow the museum's autonomy. So you wouldn't have to sell out the licensing rights in order to get the money to work on conservation. And now there's a wonderful project right now for those of you, because people can't get to Rome, and I've been part of this. We have an insider's course for the Vatican Museums. And so the patrons of the Vatican Museums are attending this. You can't get to the Vatican Museums, but we're bringing the Vatican Museums to you. So it's a wonderful event.
Maria, thank you for that opportunity for Liz to tell us about that. Liz Lev, we are quite short of time, but that's because you had so many callers. Thank you for a wonderful hour to start our week off. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You can find her on the internet. Look for Elizabeth Lev, and you will find her and take those tours. We'll see you right after this with Father Sebastian Walsh.